Hey, it's time to welcome our special guest. He's an actor and comedian who created, writes, and stars in the Golden Globe Award-winning Hulu series, Rami. The show follows a first-generation American Muslim on his journey to spiritual fulfillment in his New Jersey neighborhood. It's Rami Youssef.
Hey, Hi. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Rami, how's it going? How are you doing in this wacky world?
Well, we've been finishing editing the show. We had like 3 days of shooting that we couldn't get. Otherwise, really thankful and just like, yeah, staying, learning to cook.
Okay, let's get to that. But first of all, so if you were 4 days of stuff that you couldn't shoot, you were able to work around it, basically?
We had Mahershala Ali this season, which was amazing. When you get someone like that, you kind of have to like, you know, you have to work around like a certain amount of time, right? And so, yeah. You know, but we figured it out.
Like, that's amazing.
I'm really proud of what we're making, but yeah.
So Mahershala, how did that happen, that joining of Mahershala Ali coming onto the show?
Yeah, it was really cool. It was really organic. He just called me after season one just to say like how much he loved the season, just as like someone who's also a practicing Muslim. And so he was like, let me know if you need anything. And we hung out a couple times, and then I was like, hey, so you know, like the part about, you know, if I might need anything. And kind of was like, you know, here's you know, an idea. So he's in six out of 10, but in a way that he's just a really big part of the story.
So when you were first pitching Rami, I mean, it is a very personal story, obviously, but it also it's very universal about a guy in his 20s trying to figure out his life and figure out how he fits in with the help of his family and friends.
Yeah.
But of course, it also centers around your character and your character's quest for spiritual fulfillment in the Muslim faith. When you're first going out and selling this series, were networks asking you to make it less specific? Were they asking you to back off on the religious aspect?
I think the tightrope we're walking that is probably most difficult is to kind of like show a person in their 20s, early 30s, who has a genuine relationship with their faith, right? So it's like a person of faith of this generation is the most specific thing in this show. And if I'm being honest, it's like, it's not exactly how we pitched it. Like, I think like we more pitched the show as like, I remember the line that I had this line when I was pitching the show where I would say, like, I'm a Muslim American and I feel most like the hyphen between the two words. Like, I feel like the thing that's like there kind of holding these two, they're both really important to me. This isn't a story about separation. It's a story about synthesis. It's not about walking away from my faith. It's like, how do I, you know, go towards it, but also, you know, bring everything else that's important to me in one thing. And so I think that was the thing. And I basically was like, and there's a ton of hyphenated people and like everyone is doing some version of this. That was my pitch.
Right.
So I want to go back to the very beginning, how I know you, Rami.
Yeah.
So
Cabin Bar.
We're doing a stand-up show in the back of a bar that was just like kind of a relaxed stand-up show called English as a Second Language. And it was a hip show, but it was just a relaxed show that then all of a sudden got really popular.
Yeah.
So thinking about it and just knowing now more about your career, you're doing stand-up, but you're spending half of your life in LA doing the Nick at Night show, See Dad Run.
Yeah, it was really wild. I mean, like, I'm on a thing that, but also it's like a thing that like no one watched. So it was almost like the perfect scenario, because I think like everyone's always like trying to make like secret money, where it's like, well, I don't want to be known as like the guy from that thing. Like, I just kind of want to find a way to like be able to, you know, buy Wi-Fi on the plane without having a panic attack. And like, and so it was like kind of like that, you know, setup. Even our shooting schedule at the time was like 3 weeks of shooting, 1 week hiatus, and then I would like on my hiatus weeks just fly to New York to just do a week of stand-up.
Right. The show stars a lot of big names like Scott Baio. Do you keep in touch with anyone from that show?
It's been a bit. I talked to a lot of people from the show, though. You know, Mark Curry was on it. And Mark, what was so amazing was like he was a really big part of me like starting to do stand-up, because he would be touring during the hiatus weeks and he'd tour between seasons. And we had a bunch of our scenes together. And so I was telling him like, hey, you know, I started in sketch. I'm kind of thinking about dipping my toes into stand up. And And he was like, "Where do you do stand up?" "I'm doing a show at Flappers Comedy Club," like whatever. And he's like, "What time?" I'm like, "You're not coming," but like my set's at 10:15. And I just remember like smelling the cigar smoke as he like rolled into the Yoo-hoo room of the Flappers Comedy Club to like sit in the back. And I'm on stage and I hear his laugh and I hear him like shouting tags and like all this stuff like during my set. And everyone's like, "Is that hanging with Mr. Cooper?" And I'm like, I'm almost positive it was the next morning. My manager called me and was like, "Yes, so like Mark's reps called and they want you to do like all these dates with him, like you're gonna go open for him," whatever. I had 4 minutes of material, 5 minutes of material. Like I'm like, I don't have like a ton of stand-up, like I don't have a ton, but like he was just like, "Yeah man, this will be fun." And like I go out and I do all these rooms with him. I'm in front of this crowd that's like, "Why aren't you funny?" And it totally like it like it was the best, most humiliating, and like I would bomb. I would eat it so hard, and then Mark would just laugh. He would just be like, "That was crazy, man." And then he'd go on stage as if none of it happened. Like it was amazing. And I learned so much. I walked out of doing those shows with like 25 minutes of material that like actually worked because I was so desperate. I was just like in a hotel room in Coconut Grove, like crying, you know?
Yeah,
and
just
like
trying to crack it.
I was like, "I gotta figure this out. I gotta figure this out."
So I read that when you were a kid, your dad used to make you write book reports about things that you wanted, like Pokemon cards or a dog. By your laughter, I assume it's a happy memory.
Oh my God, where did you? Oh yeah, I must have said that at some point, but I don't know where that lives online. I wrote so many reports. Yeah,
he
anything.
He was sort of preparing you for pitching.
Yeah. I've never put that together. I gotta tell him that because like, oh my God, dude, I remember like having to be like, "Well, the thing about Pokemon is they blend natural elements. You know, some of them are fire, which is a real element. Some of them are plant-based. We're surrounded by plants."
And then would you get Pokemon cards or a dog or what have you?
I, for the most part, if I actually got to the pitching phase, the pitch would sell. And I think it was very much like weeding out like, okay, if you're not going to take the time to like do this, then
this is how I know.
Then you probably don't want it really. And like, we're not going to do it. And so I don't remember what fell through the cracks. I just remember the things that like I actually did. Yeah, did do.
So Rami, in our research, we also noticed that you're a bit of a sneakerhead. I hope that's true.
Yeah, it was actually, that was a thing. The night of the Globes was this big shoe decision where I had like a pair of dress shoes and then I had the Air Forces that I really like. And that was like a game time in the hotel. I was like, "Look, if I don't win, no one's going to really see my shoes. If I do win, I got to be comfortable." So it just became Air Forces right away. Like it was like, there's no reason why this isn't the move. Yeah.
Great. So we wrote a game for you all about sneakers.
Oh man.
All right. It's multiple choice.
See, I definitely don't know the answers because I didn't do the book report. Like this is like, this is the problem where it's like, because I didn't like train for it with my dad, like I'm just going to be like an idiot, but yeah, let's do it.
Okay. This is your first clue. In 1989, the Reebok Pump hit stores, outselling Nike Air Jordans with this slogan. Was it A, 21 Pump Street, B, Pump Up and Air Out, or C, Just Pump It?
Ooh. You know, I'm going to say A, 21 Pump Street.
21 Pump Street.
That's the best one.
For comedy. You're going for the comedy.
I'm going for comedy. It's probably B, but I'm going for comedy.
You know what? I'm going to give you the point because it is B. It is B. Pump up and air out.
Which is not a good slogan. That is not a good slogan.
I don't feel like you should put air out in a marketing thing about sneakers.
Next up, we have a historical sneaker question for you.
Amazing.
I know. So the first rubber-soled shoes were worn in the 1800s. What were they called? Were they called A, plimsolls, B, Air Napoleons, or C, little Tootsie wrappers?
Wow. Plimsolls, Air Napoleons. I'm going to go with plimsolls.
You're going to go with the correct answer, the actual correct answer. Yeah, plimsolls is that line on the ship's hull to show how much of the ship should be submerged, right? If the water goes above that, that's not good. And that line was invented by someone. His name was Samuel Plimsoll. So people thought the rubber on the shoe kind of looked like that.
Okay. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, one of the earliest known uses of the word sneakers appeared where? A, in an 1862 book called Female Life in Prison, where inmates called the warden's quiet rubber shoes sneaks. Or B, in an 1891 Boston Globe article about the invention of basketball, players called their shoes squeakers because of the sound they made on the court, and the reporter misquoted it as sneakers. Or C, a character wearing cheap shoes in Les Miserables is described by Victor Hugo as being un sneaker.
Huh, that's a tough one. I feel like it's A or B. I'm going to go with A, just because the basketball thing feels like a little...
Inmates in prison.
Yeah,
what do you got? Yeah, you are correct. That's exactly why.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, that's like a little too on the nose, the basketball thing.
It's a little too on the nose.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, this is your last clue. In the 1980s, Nike created an ad campaign around the idea that Air Jordans were banned from the NBA. Why were they supposedly banned? Was it because A, the shoe's red and black color scheme broke the NBA's rules for players' uniforms? B, the shoes went up too high, giving an unfair advantage of too much ankle protection? Not good. Or C, it clashed with Dennis Rodman's hair?
From a marketing perspective, I'm going to go with B.
I'm sorry, the answer is actually A, the shoes, red and black color scheme, broke the NBA's rules for players' uniforms.
Amazing.
Rami, you did amazing. You did amazing. Season 2 of Rami is available on Hulu now, all episodes. Rami Youssef, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me. So good to see you again and talk. And yeah, this was really fun.
Excellent. That's our show. You've heard so much from us, but now we want to hear from you. That's right. It's a two-way street, people. I want to know about your biggest, most spectacular quarantine kitchen failures. Did you perhaps attempt to bake something called birthday bread and end up with a multicolored doorstop like one of our producers? Call the Ask Me Another hotline at 848-999-4932. That's 8XXXIWeb. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Ask Me Another's house musician is Jonathan Colton.
Hey, my name anagrams to Thou Jolt a Cannon.
Our puzzles were written by Andrew Kane, Kate Villa, Sonia Weiser, Emily Winter, and senior writer Karen Lurie, with additional material by Ashley Brooke Roberts. Ask Me Another is produced by Travis Larchuk, Kiara Powell, Nancy Seychow, James Sparber, Ramel Wood, and our intern Nick Garrison. Our senior supervising producer is Rachel Neal, and our boss's bosses are Steve Nelson and Anya Grunman. Thanks to our production partner, WNYC. I'm her ripe begonias,
Ophira Eisenberg.
And this was Ask Me Another from NPR.